Okay, we'd like to talk today a little bit about a general introduction to Parcheskes Abatim and to somewhat of an overview of some of the topics that come up in the discussion of this parak. So the parak as a whole, certainly the beginning, talk about the question of what is a Cheskes Gimel Shanin. And figuring out just the first thing about that sentence is a little bit of a challenge, because the word chazaka has many different meanings, and in the context of our Mishnah, it's not clear what it means. There are many different options of what it could possibly mean. On the one hand, there are chazakas that establish reality, which, as we'll see, is the more likely type of interpretation here, that this is something that reflects some type of premise with which we work off of. Alternatively, chazakas also sometimes create things. And on the one hand, if one is only familiar with the first line of the Mishnah, maybe even the first line of the Gemara, so one could realistically believe that we are talking about a chazaka that creates something. That the Mishnah tells us, the Gemara tells us elsewhere, that one of the ways in which we take possession of land is through chazaka, akarka niknes, bekesef, shtar, ube chazaka, that we can acquire land through a chazaka. So therefore, it could be reasonable to believe that what our Mishnah is talking about, the chazaka created through residing in land over the course of 3 years, is that type of a chazaka. It's a chazaka that creates ownership of the land. Now, there are reasons not to believe that way, and the Gemara gives us very strong reasons to look in another direction. But nonetheless, that on the surface is a reasonable guess before you get too far in the Gemara, that maybe our Gemara is telling us how you perform the chazaka that gives you ownership of the land. Now that has a number of complexities in itself, because if that's the case, so maybe you might think that it's impossible to own land before 3 years, which does not seem to be a very logical possibility. It doesn't seem likely that it takes 3 years to take possession of the land. Now that doesn't necessarily have to be a problem, because first of all, there are other ways to take possession of the land, so this might just be one type, and even within the category of chazaka, there are many different types of chazaka. So all this would have to mean is that the chazaka, if one wants to take possession of land, davka, through the chazaka of living there, of spending time there, so how much time does that take? So that takes 3 years. But that, again, is also not necessarily such a likely way to understand things, as we'll see. But on the surface, it seems like somewhat of a possibility. And the Gemara initially, in understanding what's going on here, the Gemara compares this through the view of Holchei Usha being the Sanhedrin members as they were exiled through Usha. So they raise the possibility that perhaps this should be compared to the process of a Shor Mu'ad. The Torah tells us that they have a liability for a shor that changes if the shor is established to be a dangerous shor over the course of having gored 3 times. It becomes a shor mu'ad. So the first opinion in the Gemara, which doesn't make it to be the final cut, but the first opinion in the Gemara is that perhaps there's some comparison here, that just like a shor becomes established as a mu'ad over the course of 3 gorings, so too over the course of living 3 years in this property, that creates this chazaka, which maybe could even be the ownership itself. So that havamina, it's interesting to figure out what it means. So the Ramban has a comment over here in the first half of Cheskes Abatim that first raises the question of why is it that there is this connection, why is the Gemara assuming there's any relationship between Cheskes Abatim and Shor HaMuad. And the Ramban writes that perhaps they're connected in order to say that just like by a Shor HaMuad, so three negichos makes a leave from the chazaka of Tamus, from the chazaka of innocence, so to speak. So too, through this process, the Sada leaves the chazaka of one and goes to the chazaka of the other. So again, what exactly does that mean? Does that mean something is actually happening? So Rav Nosson Gishtetner, in his Chidushim on Sugyas, Nosson Pirio, so he suggests that perhaps within this Ramban, that maybe what the Ramban is getting at is that the whole concept of chazaka, when it comes to property, as we'll discuss, really chazaka can mean a couple of different things. And on the one hand, chazaka could just mean there's an edge, that because you are holding on to the property, because you're inhabiting the property, so therefore you have a leg up, so to speak. So if somebody challenges you, so the burden is on them. Motze minam muchzak alav haraya. Somebody wants to take away from the person who has a chazaka, he has to prove it. Or alternatively, it could be more than that. It could mean that we actually believe, because of your chazaka, that you own the property, that it has more of a conclusive character to it. So, Nassim Gestetner, there's a great posek in Bnei Brak, has many volumes of tshuvas in his Sefer on Sugyas. He suggests that maybe this is what the Ramban is getting at least in this Havamina, that maybe we are moving from one type of chazaka to the other, that not just the chazaka of him being there, but the chazaka of actual proof of ownership, which would be a more consequential type of shift. Could we go so far as to say that this is actually creating some type of a reality? So at least within this Havamina, there could be some bases to believe that. So that Rav Shlomo Fisher, in his Sefer Beis Yishai, suggests that just like when it comes to Shor HaMuad, so one way of understanding the Shor HaMuad is that it's not only reflective of the Shor having a violent tendency, but that it creates actually a violent tendency, so to speak, that it habituates the Shor to being violent the more he gores. And this is paralleled to a debate that we find Halacha Lemaisa. The Torah writes, as we talked about, the Torah writes that there is a machlokus between the Maharami Rutenberg and the Tosfos of Beinu Peretz concerning Mashiv HaRuach HaMarid HaGashem. That the halacha is that if you're not sure whether or not you said Mashiv HaRuach HaMarid HaGashem, so you have to repeat the Shmona Esrei, if it's been less than 30 days. If it's been a period of less than a month, so then we assume that you have your old habit, that the chazaka is that you probably did not change to Mashiv HaRuach. And the Maharami Rutenberg has a position that the Torah quotes that just like Shor HaMuad, you see the opinion of Reb Meir in the Gemara in Bava Kamma, that you can compress the process, that it doesn't just take effect if there are three gorings over 3 days, but Reb Meir's opinion is if it happens in 1 day, all the more so. And if it happens three gichos, three gorings in 1 day, then all the more so, we consider that to be a Shor HaMuad. So his opinion here is also that you can also compress the time period for saying Mashiv HaRuach and for creating that chazaka. That if you say that phrase, without tagibor and Mashiv HaRuach, 90 times in 1 day, that will create a chazaka even more quickly. And Rabbeinu Peretz, the Torah also quotes, disagrees. Rabbeinu Peretz says, no, that when it comes to Mashiv HaRuach, you're trying to create a habit, and that takes a longer period of time. That takes the full month in order for that to actually take effect. So Rav Shlomo Fisher in his Sefer suggests that the view of Rav Meir is that this is about also creating a habit, that Shor HaMuad is also about creating a habit within the Shor, and that can happen more effectively when there is even more compressed time period as far as it being trained. So he suggests that therefore the comparison between that and Cheskes Gimel Shanim is that Cheskes Gimel Shanim is also about creating a habit. How so? Because it explains that all of chazakas is about the perception of others as to who owns the property. So therefore, we're trying to habituate the people who are watching into perceiving that this person owns the property. So that takes place over the 3 years of the chazaka. So therefore, that is comparable to Shor HaMuad. That is creating a habit in the people who are watching that this is what's going on. One more angle on that. Rav Vosner in his Chuvas, and the Chuvas Shevet Halevi, in Chelek Hay, in Simen Reish Yud Zayin, he suggests, again, kind of within the Havamina, that maybe there is a transfer of property taking place here, because maybe if the original Marakama, if the original owner, is not objecting when somebody is living on his property, so maybe that could be perceived as a type of mechila, as a type of waiving his rights. He's saying that he is not objecting to somebody else taking over, and it's mechila in the sense of ceding property from one to the other by being mochel, by walking away from it. And there's an opinion in the Gemara that mechila does not need a kinyan, doesn't need any formal transfer. So maybe one could have said that yes, that actual act of living there creates the ownership through the original owner not getting in the way. Since he is mochel, since he's letting it take place, so therefore that itself does create ownership for the person who is coming there. So all of that would be within this original presentation of the Gemara, that there's some comparison here between Shor HaMuad and Cheskes Gimel Shanim, and again, that doesn't necessarily actually make it to be the final position. That makes sense so far? Any questions? questions on that? Okay, so that was the first way of looking at it a little bit. Now, the biggest reason why this doesn't seem to be the conclusion, why this doesn't seem to really be what's happening in terms of there actually being a transfer of property at this point, is the Gemara quotes the Mishnah later on as telling us that a chazakah is only effective if it's accompanied by a taina. That it's not enough for a person to say, listen, I've lived here for 3 years and nobody objected, so therefore I should own it, and I have no other claim to the property other than my living here. That would be a concept, as we discussed, similar to squatters' rights. That there is a notion sometimes that if a property is uninhabited, sometimes a person can decide to inhabit it with no other claim to ownership, and through inhabiting it, it becomes his. That's not what we're talking about, apparently, because the Gemara says it's not enough to just live there and say that's why you own it, but you have to also have a taina. What does it mean to have a taina? So you'll say that I bought this from you. And the Marakam will say, no, you didn't. And therefore you say, listen, it seems to support the fact that I bought it from you because I've lived here for 3 years and you haven't objected. So that itself is a big indication that the Cheskes Gimel Shanim is only providing credibility, providing a more likelihood that this Kenyan actually took place rather than actually making the thing happen. And as far as what does it mean to not have a taina, so Rashi and really the Mishnah seem to indicate that it means literally that, not having any claim other than just living there, saying, I don't know, I've got nothing to say, but I lived here and nobody objected. Other Rishonim thought that was too much, and that maybe to say, I don't have a taina, doesn't mean you have nothing to say, it means that the taina is a shvach taina, whatever that would be, it wouldn't necessarily be a compelling taina. Or that it's you're not revealing your taina, that you have some taina, but you're not willing to say it for whatever reason, so therefore it's not expressed taina. But whatever it is, the Mishnah tells us, and the Gemara here quotes, that to not have a taina is something that would invalidate this whole process of establishing a chazaka. So that's a crucial part of the process. So even if we assume that what's happening is that this process is basically revealing some kind of premise, revealing some kind of truth, or some kind of fact that's enough for us to work off of in order to decide who to side with in a dispute here. So it's still not clear what exactly are we revealing and how much are we revealing. How powerful an indicator is this? Because it could be a chazaka of very mild relevance. It could be that it's just enough to kind of tilt the scales. So now all things being equal, so we side with the person who's living there, but it doesn't necessarily mean that he actually is solidly pointed to as the owner. Or it could mean something more than that. It could mean that it's a very significant statement of ownership that, that together with a claim that he bought it, or or a claim that he received it as a gift, becomes very credible. So that's a little bit of a discussion also. The Ritva, in the beginning of his commentary here to the Gemara, so the Ritva picks up on the line, Minayin l'cheskes gimel shanim, where do you get this whole idea of cheskes gimel shanim? So the Ritva explains that we're asking under the assumption that this is somewhat comparable to a cheskes metaltalin. If somebody is holding a property that is movable, somebody's holding a MP3 player of some sort, let's say, so then we work off the assumption that it's probably his. Doesn't mean it's definitely his. There are many reasons why he might be holding something that's not his. But the likelihood, the edge is towards him that it's probably his. So maybe this is a comparable concept. And therefore the Ritva explains that really that's the question when the Gemara asks, where do you get Cheskes Gimel Shanim? Because when it comes to Metaltalin, we assume it immediately. As soon as we see somebody holding something, we assume that it's his. And there's no need for any time period. And if you want to say that when it comes to land, so land is different because it takes longer to establish your presence because anybody can walk in or walk out, so then fine, so then let it take forever. But who says 3 years is significant? So that's the whole question of the Gemara under the assumption that we are working off something like a Cheskes Metaltalin, and therefore the Gemara wants to know where do we get this whole 3 year concept from. So here there is a interesting assertion of the Ketzos HaChoshen. The Ketzos HaChoshen, working off a comment of the Nimuke Yosef and arguing that this is different from other Rishonim, so the Ketzos asserts that when it comes to the concept of Gimel Shanim, that we're essentially talking about a Takanas Chachamim here. It's because we do find the language in the Mukhe Yosef of a reference to Lo Tiknu Chachamim Ela Gimel Shanim, and that the rabbis seem to have put into place this notion of 3 years. And based on that, so the Ksos develops this theory that there are other Rishonim, such as the Ramban, who we'll talk about in a few minutes, who believe this is reflective of a Din Min HaTorah. And when we deal with Din Min HaTorah, so we are still willing to base ourselves on Chazakas, on certain ways of establishing reality. So we could say this is all valid on a level of Min HaTorah. And the Ksos is saying that no, other Rishonim are arguing on that and saying that this is an institution of Chazal. And apparently, it would seem to be that his understanding is that this is for the good of the world, for there to be a viable market system. People aren't going to buy houses if they never have any security, if they believe that any time somebody could show up and claim that their great-grandfather owned the property and now it's theirs and they haven't been here for 50 years but now they're taking it over. So then that's going to be very inhibiting on the whole market. People aren't going to want to buy property never knowing when they could be secure. So therefore, we have to make a ruling that after a certain time it's not fair anymore and there's a 3-year limit. So that seems to be the way the Ksos understands it. Some of the later Sfarim were not thrilled with that formulation. Because first of all, as far as the Ksos finding that language in the Nemukhe Yosef and saying it's the Machlokas Rishonim, so the truth is a lot of other Rishonim, you have to look around a little bit, but there's a Rashi in Ksubis and there's a Tosfos in Bava Metzia, and there are other Rishonim in Bava Basra, including a Ramban later on, that all make reference in one form or another to some type of Takanas Chachamim here, to some type of institution of Chazal. So the idea that there is a Machlokas Rishonim, with some of the Rishonim believing that this is just a reflection of the Din Min HaTorah, and others saying, no, this is a Takanas Chachamim in order to keep the market going. So some of the later Sfarim didn't feel that that was an accurate read, and felt that we have to assume that really there's a hybrid here, that really the Rishonim generally agree, and there's two halves of the same sentence. That yes, these Chazakas are relevant to Min HaTorah, that Chazakos are effective in terms of establishing what the reality is, even on a level of Min HaTorah. And the question is, what role do Chachamim have here? So apparently there's still some role. Apparently Chachamim came and were metakein something which interacts with this Chazaka, this Daraisa principle of figuring out reality. So the Stipler in his Sefer, so he understands that the Takana will bring about the Chazaka, that because Chazal came and said 3 years, that's the cutoff point, and 3 years, the Gemara tells us, is the amount of time in which somebody will tolerate somebody else living on his property on the one hand, and on the other hand, how long we can expect somebody to be careful with his shtar. It's an important line which the Gemara introduces, that during a 3-year period, people are careful holding on to their original deed of sale. After that, they're not so careful, so we can't hold it against them if they don't have one. So this Daipa says that essentially, by having this cutoff of 3 years, so that's going to create this reality. That will force people to hold on to the shtar, at least for the first 3 years. That will force people who want to be makbid within the first 3 years. So now those chazakas become relevant because Chazal came and created this takana. So essentially he hybrids the positions that way, that the chazakas are reliable enough that we can believe them in HaTorah, but they are instigated by the fact that Chazal made this institution. And Rav Asher Weiss, in his Sefer, say he is not so excited about the Stipler's formulation. He thinks, again, he very much believes that this is a hybrid situation, that all the Rishonim essentially agree, or many of the Rishonim essentially agree, that there is a Takanas Chachamim involved. But the way he sees it is that essentially, there's a similar positions also in Rav Scheinberg's Sefer on the Ksos. Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg has a Sefer on the Ksos called the Tabas HaChoshen, where he says something similar, and Nosnik Shtetner has a little bit different, but also not so different, that essentially the Chazakas really are everything, that whatever the premise is, whatever the likelihood is as far as whether somebody would be careful with the Shtar, or whether somebody would be likely to be makbid, these are really completely controlling of the situation. The problem is, before the Takanas Chazal, says Rav Asher Weiss, for example, So any time you're going to have a fight over who owns the property, whether it's the Marakama who originally owned it, or whether it is the Machzik who's there now, so what's going to happen? They're going to come in front of the Beis Din, and the Beis Din is going to have to try to figure out, okay, so is it likely that this person could have lost his shtar? He doesn't have a shtar now, so does that mean that he never had one, or is it likely that he lost it? Well, let's figure out. Does he lose all of his other stuff? Does he have any other documents? Is he a person who's normally careful? Is a person who normally loses documents? We'll have to analyze that. And then the original Marakama, so he didn't complain for the first 3 years. So is that meaningful? Well, let's see. Does he usually get upset when people use his stuff? Does he usually express his kveda later? Does he usually take a long time to getting around to it? We'll have to figure out in each case what are the likely realities, which will then establish how to decide in this case. So what Chazal did was they were koveya. They said that 3 years is the cutoff point, and that's how we, like a shiur yechachamim. Normally we have shiurim for all dinim and haTorah, that eat a kezayis, so that's considered to be a fulfillment of the mitzvah of matzah, less than a kezayis. So now we have shiurim everywhere, but that's generally understood to be halacha l'moshe miSinai, it's a tradition from Sinai. Here it's a takana of Chazal, but essentially that's what it's accomplishing. It's saying that here's where we'll draw the line, and Beis Din's not going to have to try to figure out in every case whether this is somebody who's likely to lose his shtar, somebody who's less likely, somebody who's likely to be makbid, etc., etc. Hi. So that's interesting. So that could be a good idea, and it could be to some extent that happens. That's Edim aren't always easy to find. But that's also an opportunity to point out. So that would be a different type of takana. So what Rav Asher Weiss points out, and he argues kind of with this, kind of with, let's say, the Ketzos's formulation in this, is that this is not a takana latova satzibor, so to speak. This is not something that they said we're going to put into place so that business works better. And it's not that kind of takana like you just described, where they said we should do something. But rather, this is Chazal stepping in and saying, when we have to decide whether things land on one side of the fence or the other, we're going to draw the line here. So it's a little bit of a different type of takana. So we could have thought that takana should be like that. It's an active type of takana. Here's what we should do. Here's what we shouldn't do. So he goes out of his way to say he doesn't think that's the kind of takana. That even though the language sounds a little bit more like that, that it's a type of institution that you should do something, he understands it differently. That when the Rishonim referred to Tiknu Chazal, it's what they were saying, here's where we draw the line. Here's how we adjudicate when we have competing claims. So here's what we'll say, if it lands on this side, it's this way, that side, it's the other way. And in the Sefer Nas Imperios, Rav Nasi Gestad has a similar type of idea, but he says also, since the Gemara says that it's a reality of a person is careful with the shtar for the 3 years, so that means that less than 3 years, if a person has been living there for 1 year, and the Ma'arer comes, the Marakama comes and says, you're living on my property, and the person who's living there says, no, you sold it to me. So that claim is shvach, that claim is a little weak, because we could say to him, well, show me your shtar. If you bought this, so where's your contract? So he'll say, I lost my contract. So we'll say to him, well, that's not so likely, because for 3 years, people are careful with their contract, and therefore we tend not to believe you when you say you lost your contract. So that itself is, again, a reflection of the Takanas Chazal, that we understand the care of the contract to be 3 years, so that's part of what Chazal put into place, a similar formulation. Okay, so that's one way of seeing it, that essentially we have this Takanas Chachamim. So the Stipler, they so saw it as basically a machlokas rishonim. Either these are chazakas min haTorah or takanas chachamim. And a lot of later svarim understood that that's not really a machlokas, that really it's a hybrid here. And there's both going on, that there are chazakas that are effective min haTorah, and that there is a takanas chachamim that somehow is interacting with that, and there are different formulations of how exactly that works. Any questions about any of that? Okay, so once we have this established chazaka, so there's also a discussion in the Achronim as to how powerful it is. So what exactly does it say? So do we view it, for example, as what we might call a hochacha ba'alma, as a type of minor kind of proof, so to speak, proof with lowercase p, saying that it's an indication that somebody owns it, but it's not really such a slam dunk. Or would we call it an anansadi? An anansadi meaning that it's essentially a type of edus. Anansadi means that we testify, we being society, that society sees that this is going on. So that essentially has the power of edus, the something that's taking place in public. And the community as a whole is able to observe it happening. Sometimes that's powerful enough that that has the power like edus. This is something that is as if two edim came and formally witnessed it. So that's the question that some of the later Sfarim asked. So what is the Cheskes Gimel Shanim? Is it just this edge, that hachacha, that if we have nothing else, we can use this to point us in one direction? Or does it become really a stronger point, an anan sadi, as if a communal edus, that this is taking place? There's a discussion about this in a Sefer Rashi Sha'arim. Rashi Sha'arim with the Shiurim of Reb Leib Gurvitz. Reb Leib Gurvitz was the Rosh Yeshiva of the Yeshiva in Gateshead in England. And he quotes in his introduction, he has a tradition from the Balamor that when you name your Sefer, you should give honor to the place that you were in. So since he was in Gateshead, so he called the Sefer Rashi Sha'arim, meaning heads of gates. Once Rebbe in Karen Biavna, Reb Lachman, went suddenly with the Sefer, and he took a look at it, and he commented that really the name Gateshead is from the Gaelic, and it really means goat's head. So therefore, he should have called it Rashi Izim. But in any event, he called it Rashi Shar, meaning heads of gates. And he has a discussion there about this point, and he notes that Rebbe Kiva Eger seems to have this stuffing, because Rebbe Kiva Eger raises the question. Sometimes, you know, we credit somebody with a migo. If somebody admits something, which he doesn't have to admit, so then that gives him more credibility. You say, migo, since he could have denied it completely, the fact that he admitted it, so that gives him some credibility. So what if you would have a situation where, let's say, the original owner comes, and he says, I admit that the machzik lived there for 3 years, but I believe that he did it illegitimately. He said he did a big zelum. So essentially, he could have just denied the whole chazakah. But he comes and he acknowledges the chazakah himself. So is that called amigo, that we will now give him more credibility? Because on the one hand, we could say, yes, that's amigo, that's something you want to acknowledge. On the other hand, we could say it's amigo against the Cheskas Gimel Shanim. And maybe that's called edus. Maybe that's called amigo against witnesses, against edim, where we generally don't credit amigo. So that's a suffix in Rebbe Kiva Eger, whether we give him any points for admitting the chazakah. And he suggests that that seems to be the issue here, that what is the amigo up against? Is it just up against a minor type of tilting of the equation, in which case maybe amigo can tilt it the other way? Or is it up against edim? Is it up against this assertion of society that this person basically owns it? Hi.
I'm saying this case amigo doesn't work because where was it for the first 2 years?
So that itself, you could say, could be undermined by something else. That there's a chazakah, that maybe that's what the whole Cheskas Gimel Shanim is, that the chazakah that a person who wants to be makbid is going to be makbid within the first 3 years. So once he doesn't do that, so that itself is a chazakah against his amigo. So that's essentially what the question is, that there is this Cheskas Gimel Shanim. The question is, how powerful is it? So whether the chazakah is created by his negligence, so to speak, or by the other person living there, that's actually something we'll talk about in a second, but that is the chazakah. So the question is, what does that chazakah say? Is the chazakah strong enough to knock out his migo? Because essentially it's like edus against him, it's the powerful chazakah. Or is it a weak kind of concept? Is it basically just a tilting of the equation, which maybe if there's anything else to work on, gets retilted back? Yor Samech, in his essays, has a discussion of this as well. Yor Samech, the Remeir Simcha Kohen Sefer on the Rambam. So the Sefer on the Rambam, the Yor Samech, is the more well-known, established Sefer. Later on, they printed his Chidushim on Shas. So in the Sefer Chidushim, Remeir Simcha on Shas and Bava Basra, the beginning of Cheskas Abatim, so yeah, he talks about this as well. And he suggests that it depends. And on the one hand, the basic Cheskas Gimel Shanim, just living there without being challenged, says that's really a hochacha ba'alma. That's kind of a weaker tilting of the equation. But the Gemara also says that, the Gemara that we'll see soon, that when he's living there, if the Ma'arer says, here, I will help you carry the fruit, so then that creates an instant chazaka, that here if the original owner acknowledges his right to the fruit in such a direct way, that creates an immediate chazaka that takes place right away. So he says, that's more powerful, that's an anan sadik. So just being there for 3 years unchallenged, that's a hochacha ba'alma, that's just a tilting. If this concept the Gemara has, that the owner helps him out, the original owner helps him out, that takes the position of being an actual anan sadi. So, related to what Yoni was asking, so this question of what exactly is the operative element in creating this, so is it essentially that the person lives there and that's what's creating this chazaka? It's just that if he's being challenged, and that doesn't count, you have to live there in a way that is powerful enough to not have somebody complain about it? Or is it the negligence or the passivity, let's say, of the original owner? So the Ramban has a statement which many, many Svarim discuss as being very central to this whole discussion. And we saw it together, the Ramban in his Chidush Mandaf Membeis. So the Ramban discusses the fact that what if the current machzik, the person who's living there right now, is a katan? So does that, let's say it was originally an owner who passed away, so now his son is living there. So the Ramban quotes a view that by katan we only mean he's younger than his father, but he has to be an adult, because a katan can't create a chazaka. Why not? Because this whole premise about holding on to your star, so a katan can't be expected to hold on to his star anyway, he's not capable of being so careful. So therefore, his lack of holding on to the star is not going to be significant. So therefore, the potential macha, the potential objection from the original owner is also not going to be so significant. Hi?
Aren't there more fundamental questions with the katan being kone?
So that's an interesting question. The question is he being kone at all? So that's probably relevant to the point, because if we assume that the chazaka itself is a kinyan, so that's what to talk about, although we generally assume that at least for some purposes a katan can be kone, he can't be machne back, which is why we have a complexity. It doesn't apply this year because there's no lulav, there's no din of ownership by lulav, because it's only the first day sukkahs. But normally when you have to own a lulav on the first day sukkahs, so there's a problem if you give it to a katan, because a katan could own it, but he can't give it back to you. So that creates that complexity. So it's an interesting issue to pursue. If we assume that the chazaka is creating ownership, then that would be interesting to pursue, whether that's a problem or not. But here the Ramban says, in any event, it's worth probably assuming it's not. This is not an active kinyan anyway. But the Ramban quotes this view that a katan cannot create a chazaka because he can't be held responsible to watch the shtar anyway. So the Ramban says, no, that's not really, he doesn't think that's the case. He thinks that even a katan does create a chazaka. Why? Because the real operative, active ingredient here is that the original marakama is not objecting. He sees people living in his house, and he's not objecting. So that itself makes it likely that he no longer owns it. So if that's the case, then it doesn't really matter whether the person living there is an adult or a child. Now you could say, as the Ramban goes on to say, now you could have said, so all right, so since the katan can't be expected to hold on to the shtar, so the whole reis, or the whole weakness that comes from not having the shtar, shouldn't apply to the katan at all. And maybe we should say the chazaka kicks in right away. He doesn't have this whole issue of being expected to hold on to the shtar for 3 years. So he says, that's not fair. We're not going to say that just because he's not a bendas, we're going to make it harder on the original owner. So we're not going to make a distinction in that direction. So we'll still apply the three-year requirement. But the point being that we're not totally dependent on the ability of the person living there to hold on to the shtar. That really, this is all about the passivity of the original owner. So his understanding, this, by the way, is the Ramban that the Ksos quoted when asserting there's a machlokus between the Ramban and the Nimuki Yosef, but the Ramban himself later on quotes the Nimuki Yosef, as others point out. But in any event, so this Ramban is perhaps very instructive in focusing on the passivity of the original owner, the shtika of the original owner as being the operative element in what's going on here. I mentioned that there is, sorry?
Yeah, what is that? What's the difference between Mokapir, Inisha, Tas Shani, and Shtar, right? What's the difference?
It could be they relate to each other, and that's also something that we see. It could be that they, the two halves of the equation are basically ha-ba-ha. And the Gemara starts these two sentences, right? That on the one hand, more than 3 years, it's hard to believe that original owner is not going to object. And a person is not going to just sit back for more than 3 years. And the Gemara also said, right after that, that a person hold on to a shtar for 3 years. So they could be that they're tied into each other, this whole notion of hanging on to your shtar. So why do you hang on to your shtar? You hang on to your shtar because you expect that somebody's going to come and challenge you. So if 3 years pass and nobody's come to challenge you, and if we assume that after 3 years people aren't likely to do that, so then that itself would become a reason why people wouldn't hold on to it. So it could be that they're essentially reflections of the same idea. We mentioned before that also there is a comment to the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer in his Chidushim to Baba Basra also has a statement that this is really in the Havamina, this is really in the opinion of Halchei Usha, but it could be relevant here also, that maybe what the Chazakah does is that it creates a change in terms of the house in terms of the Shem HaBailim. The Shem HaBailim is Nishtaka, Shem HaBailim is basically passes away, passes on, that during the first 3 years, so that house is known as Bob's house. So when Joe comes and says, it's my house, so we'll say, what do you mean? It's Bob's house. Prove it. And after 3 years, so that status kind of changed. That status moves from one place to another. So now it's not known as Bob's house anymore, it's just a house. So when Joe comes and says, I own the house, so it's not challenged by the fact that it's Bob's house. So that's consistent with the idea that, even though he's saying in the Havamina, it's consistent with the idea that the original owner, by not being Makbid, he's letting his association with the house go away, and that kind of changes the nature of the presumption of who owns what. Now, this whole question, if we assume that really the operative element here then is the macha, is the other person objecting or not objecting, so then it also becomes very relevant as to what are the parameters of the macha. And it's interesting to note that a lot of the Rishonim maintain, the Rosh and the Muki Yosef quotes from Rabbeinu Yonah, that if the original owner does a valid macha, and he does it completely out of the presence of the machzik, and even if the machzik doesn't actually find out about it, so then the Rishonim say that this is considered to be a valid macha. Because it's not so much about what the machzik was doing, it's about the fact that the original owner is not objecting. So if he objects, so then that is considered to be effective, even if he does it completely somewhere else. Stipler assumes that this is also reflective of the idea that it's a tekanas chazal, which is a discussion of itself. But that whole notion, this whole focus on the macha taking place wherever it takes place, seems to emphasize that this is really a reflection of what the original owner does or doesn't do. So if that's the case also, so then it seems that we're very interested in focusing on the provocation of the macha. That the assumption here is that there should have been a macha if 3 years of residence passed without any objection. So then that says something. So we're focused on the provocation, that there's a reason here for there to be a macha. And 3 years pass without that, that's significant. So if that's the case, so one could say that 3 years is also one type of provocation, but there are other provocations as well. That there are other things that could be considered more immediate that might also justify or really call for a macha, and without a macha might also create some reality. And Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, in the shirim that they printed from him, so he goes through some of these cases in Rishonim where you see at least the possibility that there are other ways to create a chazaka. He mentions in the Tshuva Sarashba, it's based on a Gemara, that if the machzik makes fundamental changes in the land, not just eating the produce which will regenerate, but also making pits in the land, or rebuilding things, or chopping up the property, doing things that any normal person would object. So you can't just do that when you're visiting my house, you can't do that when you're staying there. So that should also create an automatic chazaka. In addition, the Gemara, which we'll see in Chavtas in the days, the Gemara also says that if you have, let's say, a number of machzikim, more than one person taking over, and they write a shtar amongst themselves saying how they're going to divide up the property, so that also becomes mafursim, that becomes something that's well known, and that also could be expected to provoke a macha. So also a Rashbam, later on, in the Chesem and Aleph, interpreting the Mishnah, where he seems to suggest that the whole purpose of 3 years is because of the assumption that the Marikama might be somewhere else. That maybe it may take him a while to actually hear about what's going on and to assert himself. But there is a possibility that if he's right there, it's right in his presence, and he chooses not to object, that that might also be a statement that could provoke a macha, and the lack of doing so is also perhaps indicative. We'll just add one more point. Sugya on Chavtas in the days, which we'll see together, God willing, soon, so we won't go into it now. But what basically emerges is you have a machlokas between Rav and Rav Nachman. Now, what happens if you have a suffik about whether or not there is a chazaka, about whether or not a chazaka took place? So if you have a suffik, who is the burden on? Is the burden on the machzik? Or is the burden on the ma'arer? Who has to prove that there really either was or was not a chazaka? So there is a nice discussion about this. My distinguished relative from the neighborhood, Rabbi Zachary Gelli, the rabbi of Breuers, recently came out with a sefer called Zeichem Menachem, where he has a whole essay about this. And he basically goes through the fact that, again, similar to what we mentioned before, that a chazaka has different elements to it. That a chazaka just means, on one level, that I am the muchzak, that I have an edge because right now it's in my properties, or I'm holding on to it, so therefore I'm more likely to be the owner. Or a chazaka really means that I am in control. A chazaka really establishes my actual ownership of the, or proves my actual ownership as being genuine. So it could be that this machlokas in the Gemara about who is the burden on is about this question of what is the chazaka. Is the chazaka just a statement of tilting the equation towards the present inhabitant? Or is it really a statement that he is the owner, and therefore that is going to have ramifications for who has the burden of proof if they want to say otherwise? So that's just a general overview, just some of the key concepts. Just to quickly chazer what we spoke about, so we talked about this whole question. The Gemara has this notion of Cheskas Gimel Shanim. We posed the question of whether that is actually creating something or whether that's more establishing that something is true. We discussed the Havamina that maybe it is actually creating something, which is less likely to be the case for various indications from the Gemara. But we saw the fact the initial statement in the Gemara, the Hoche Usha, compared to Shor HaMuad, maybe Shor HaMuad also is a way of creating some type of reality, either through habituating or through formally establishing a certain legal status. We discussed, for example, with Nassim Gestetner's comment about the Ramban, that maybe it's about transferring there from one type of chazaka to the other. A chazaka that's not just an edge, but an actual statement of ownership. We discussed Rav Shlomo Fisher's position that it's all about habituation, that Shor HaMuad, according to at least one opinion of the Gemara, is about habituating the shore, and so to Cheskas Gimel Shanim, according to that comparison, would be about habituating society to see him as the owner. And we mentioned the Chuvas Shevet Halevi, that maybe it's about the mechila, the lack of objecting, actually transferring the property to the current machzik, even without a kinyan, which might be a valid type of mechila. But then we noted that the Gemara has this concept of chazaka she'enima taina eina chazaka, based on the Mishnah, that if there's no taina, there's no claim that you own it, you bought it, then it's not an effective chazaka, which seems to be saying that it's not doing something, rather it's just supporting something. And then we pose the question of, if that's the case, so what level of support is it establishing? We mentioned the whole view of the Ramban, for example, of the Ritva, rather, that the notion of the Gemara asking about Cheskas Gimel Shanim is to compare it to a chazaka on movable property. The question is, why does it take time? And then we mentioned the view of the Tzos, that there's Machlokas Rishonim here, that the Nebuki Yosef and others say it's a Takanas Chachamim, apparently a takana so that people should feel secure in buying property, and that other Rishonim disagree and believe it's a Dimin HaTorah. We mentioned that later Sfarim felt that really all the Rishonim generally are on the same page here, that this is really a Takanas Chachamim, but it's a hybrid of a Takanas Chachamim with certain realities of chazaka, and the question is just, is it a is the takana essentially forcing the realities to prove themselves? That's the way the stipler understood, or is it a way of just drawing a line in the sand somewhere so that we know how to adjudicate things? The way of Asher Weiss understood, and we saw that from Scheinberg and others have similar positions as well. And then we talked about the question of who exactly is, part of the question of whether this Cheskes Gimel Shanim, is it just a tilting, a hochacha, or is it like an unensadi, like a communal proof? We saw that this could be, this is a question that the Rosh Hasharim discussed, and how it could be Rabbi Kiva Eger's question about whether a Migo would be effective against the Cheskes Gimel Shanim. And we talked about the Rebbeir Simcha's position, that there's a difference between the chazaka of living there and the immediate chazaka that the Gemara says that happens when the original owner says, I'll help you carry the fruits. And we talked about the question of whether the focus is on what the inhabitant is doing or whether the focus is on the original owner not objecting. We saw the Ramban says that it's all about the original owner being quiet, which is why even if it's a cotton living there, it's still going to be effective. And then we talked about some of the questions about what's considered to be a valid macha, the fact that the Rishonim seem to assert that if a person does a macha, even in the presence of other people, not the original machzik, that's still effective, even if the machzik doesn't hear about it, all putting the focus on his passivity or lack of passivity. And therefore, we talked about how other provocations might also be relevant. We talked about the case of the Chuvas Rashba, if the new owner does significant changes to the property, the question of what if the new owners, plural, decide to make a shtar divide the property amongst themselves, which will then become well known, or the Rashbam's statement that maybe the whole idea of 3 years is about the person being in proximity, being far away. If he's in proximity, if he's right there seeing what's going on, then maybe it's immediate. And then we talked also about how the Gemara that we'll see later has a machlokus between Rav and Rav Nachman about if there's a question, if there was a chazaka, who has the burden to establish their side of the story? Is the burden on the present resident, on the machzik, or on the original owner, on the marakama? And that could also be relevant to this whole question, what is the chazaka establishing? Is it establishing a tilting of the scales towards the current machzik, or is it establishing that actual ownership here, a proof of actual ownership? And that could be the question as to where the burden is. Okay, we'll stop there.